Please welcome to the stage moderator Kevin Battey, Delta Strategy Group, and panelists Trevor Bacon, Parcel, Jonathan Schmalfeld, The Digital Chamber, Joaquin Gubb, Crypto.com, and Jeremy Levine, Underdog.
Okay, hello everybody, and thanks for joining us for our next panel on prediction markets. Let the markets decide, that's our title. Very quickly, if we could just run through introductions, I'd just like to give everybody's title. Trevor Bacon, co-founder and CEO of Parcel. Joaquin Gubb, VP Capital Markets Legal at Crypto.com. Jeremy Levine, founder and CEO of Underdog, and Jonathan Schmalfeld, who is our policy director at the Chamber, and I'm Kevin Battey, Delta Strategy Group. And the best thing about this panel is that they're all clients of Delta Strategy Group. No, kidding. It doesn't mean we'll go easy on them, right? So I guess just to start off, to set the scene, maybe each of you could give us a little bit of information about your prediction markets and how they might differ from traditional prediction markets or old prediction markets, to the extent they do. And maybe we can start at the end and work our way back.
For sure. Hey, everyone. I'm Jeremy, the founder, CEO of Underdog, and Underdog's whole mission is make sports more fun, right? We build games for sports fans in America. And we've been using prediction markets since the start of September in partnership with Crypto.com to help do that. We recently acquired a DCM DCO, so don't have that live yet, but are building our own exchange and going to kind of vertically integrate the whole offering on the consumer experience to just bring more markets, more moments, more enjoyment to sports fans.
Joaquin?
Yeah, thank you. Joaquin Gubb, Crypto.com. So, one of our largest slogans is cryptocurrency in every wallet, but we really are trying to become a company that offers all types of financial products to its customers. You'll often hear about that super app. We are working towards that. We have a very substantial broker-dealer. We obviously have a very large crypto market. We recently got our OCC conditional approval, and we also have a fully registered CFTC marketplace where we do prediction markets as well. We partner with a number of different industry leaders in this area, but we want, again, to just offer all types of different financial products to our customers.
Nice. I'm Trevor Bacon, the CEO of Parcel. We do not offer a prediction market, but we offer real-time data feeds that power financial instruments like perpetual futures and prediction markets. We went live on Polymarket in January and power markets like the median price per square foot in Miami, New York, Chicago, and we're working on expanding into other prediction markets as well.
And Digital Chamber doesn't actually have a prediction market, as you probably know. But I am the policy director that leads our prediction market working group. So when I joined Digital Chamber about 6 months ago, our CEO and VP of Government Affairs and Policy both asked me, like, what's one area Digital Chamber is not active in that we should be? And prediction market was my instantaneous answer. I think that right now we're seeing prediction markets, some of which use blockchain-enabled technology as rails, some that don't. But I think that it's largely going to all be using blockchain-enabled rails, just both from instantaneous settlement advantages to the ability to monitor and the ability to compliance functionality within them. We see that technology being there. So with technology being a key underpinning of this largely growing area of finance, we want to make sure Digital Chamber is actively involved there.
So what, you know, some critics would say this is just these markets are purely for entertainment. They don't have any social value other than that. How would you respond to those critics? What are the public policy benefits? And anybody can answer this What would you say are the public policy benefits to society or to individuals?
I'll tell you first, if that's all right. At Crypto.com, we actually own a company used to call Nadex, but we've rebranded it as Crypto.com Derivatives North America. And it was actually the original company that came out with prediction markets. So we've been doing this for about 20 years now. We did congressional control contracts. We also did it on PCI and some other economic factors. But more recently, we were the first into the sports contracts markets as well. But what we look to deliver to customers is markets that they want to take a financial interest in. And what that means is, you know, not just sports contracts, but we do what we call culture markets, so things like the Oscars. We do all types of financial products that our customers want to trade. And so we look at it not just as like a very narrow process for trading a certain type of product. We look at it as delivering what our customers want. And what they want information. They want to be able to trade their point of view, and they want to be able to have access to markets that interest them. And we seek to deliver that.
I'd also add in that the Fed just did a study recently that looked at prediction markets and the value it has when it comes to interest rates, for example. So people will talk their book when they talk about predictions for interest rates. You can't tell what to trust, and there isn't the surveys aren't real time. So what prediction markets do is they provide real time data that is largely more accurate than lots of things you're seeing published by even the most sophisticated financial actors. So that kind of real-time data and that kind of accuracy has such a huge value to our society as a whole, not just people participating in those markets, but people making decisions off of what they're predicting is going to happen in the future.
Yeah, and if you look at sports, I mean, the currency of sports is news and info, right? It's probably the thing in this country that has the most interest, the most attention, the most passion. And you look at the thirst for that passion, people want to be informed about their teams, their players, and just the kind of market that exists for sports news, sports journalism, sports media. It's one of the biggest markets in this country. And prediction markets just bring that to life in a really meaningful way.
Yeah, to close, I think prediction markets are effectively monetized opinions, and they allow better information to be told through markets and find truth through markets, and that allows policymakers, businesses, and consumers to act in their daily lives with better information.
I'll say, you know, we're policy advisors in Washington, D.C., and we often look to prediction markets to get a sense of maybe where a bill is going, what's going to happen in, you know, is the House going to flip? And just occasionally I'll see on CNBC, I'll see parcel data up there on, you know, real estate market. And it's, if you're someone who might be buying a house or thinking about investing in real estate, it's nice to be able to kind of see where, you know, where that's going. And sometimes the prediction markets can be more accurate than, you know, polls or sentiment. That's just in my personal experience, I've seen that. Okay, could one or more of you who would like to walk us through a concrete example of a contract on your platform, how it works, who the typical participants are, how you manage risk and market integrity? Just kind of give folks a little bit more behind the scenes. I think everybody here understands what a prediction market is at a high level and maybe has gone online and looked at where something's trading, but just a little more of a concrete example or a walkthrough.
Yep, sure. I'll take that first. I'll do something that's probably a little less controversial. We have a partnership with Hollywood.com. They have a very bespoke model where they have a customer base that's very interested in certain aspects of the Hollywood market. Look, that's a multi-trillion dollar market there between movies, the Southern California economy that it supports, all the other sort of aspects of that. We have contracts, for instance, on the Oscars. So if you are an avid moviegoer, you go onto Hollywood.com, you see a lot of different information about who might be a leading contender for a certain Oscar or what movie might be the leading contender. You may have a different view on that. We have specific contract terms that we look at. When you onboard with us, you onboard as a direct member of our DCO, so our clearing entity. So we do all the AML, KYC. We have the all of the regulation is done in-house at our level. We know exactly who the customer is. And we have the added benefit, unlike in the broker-dealer world, where we can take direct action against that account holder. Kalshi recently released information on somebody, I believe it was on the Mr. Beast that my daughter watches all the time. And apparently there was somebody who was affiliated with that organization, and they took direct action against the account holder. You don't see that generally in the securities market where your broker-dealer takes a direct action against a customer. So we have the ability to reach all the way down, make a decision as to whether or not there's any inappropriate conduct, and take timely remedial action against that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I could go in terms of how Parcel works. So we're offered through Polymarket outside the U.S. We have the prediction would be what is the median home price in Chicago, Miami, New York, the USA at large. These are currently offered at monthly strikes. So this contract, for example, would be what will the median home price in New York be at the end of March? The price bands are set via basically a distribution on top of what the last price was in February. They're the typical customer as of right now, given it's outside the U.S., is likely retail. And then all the execution and risk management goes through the Polymarket platform.
So I'm going to turn now to sort of the legal side of this, the legal and regulatory side of this. And, you know, there's been a lot of, I'd say, market confusion about what these products are. Are they traditional derivatives? Are they, you know, something new, separate, different, a prediction market? Are they gambling? So how do your platforms look at this? And how does that line get drawn and show up in your, you know, legal and compliance team? And I guess this is going to be probably primarily for Joaquin because, although, you know, yeah.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
The Underdog is going to be there soon with their DCM, DCO, which they just acquired. And then and Jonathan, as you're also you're the policy director, but you're also a lawyer, and you've thought through these issues on the chamber working group here. So,
yeah, so I'll take that first. Thank you so much, Kevin. We have very robust surveillance. We work with some of the premier surveillance providers in the industry who do data points, do reviews of our markets, provide us information in specific marketplaces. With anomalies, tracking all types of trading activity. But generally, what you're looking for is the ability to detect, get alerts about certain activity. Most of my history is at FINRA. FINRA does basically all the insider trading reviews for instance, the securities markets, both the options and the equities markets. When you're looking at specific types of activity, it can be very hard to bring a legal case against individuals. My colleagues, some of them from FINRA I see in the room, they produce about 450 referrals of insider trading to the SEC every year. The SEC brings about 35 of those cases, 10 of which are usually whistleblower cases about. What I'm trying to say is those cases are very hard to prove. The scienter you have to have associated with the manipulative trading and bringing those cases to the full fruition, it takes years. It's an investment. We're willing to do that investment. But, again, we have the ability to take direct action against our market participants, within a matter of days once we've made a determination. So we like the structure of what we do and the ability that owning the entire stack provides us to ensure that there's market integrity in the trading activity that occurs on our marketplace. And my last point on that is, and we get to do that here in the U.S. because of how strong the rules are. Both Commodities Exchange Act and the Securities Exchange Act bring to bear insider trading, non-trading by government officials, which has been in the headlines a lot. Like, if you work for the government agency, you're not allowed to trade or share information. You have a duty. That's the premise of most of the insider trading laws. So bring those to markets here in the U.S. where we know that people are looking at them, where we have the robust surveillance, where we have the ability to bring those cases in our justice system, and also on our individual SRO markets. And I would encourage people to look at that, because if you just allow it to all be offshore, you're not even subject in large part to U.S. regulations in that case.
I'll just add in, on lots of litigation we're seeing, you're asking these same questions. Where's the line drawing? And will Digital Chamber likely be involved in litigation in the very near future for amicus efforts? But the answer to that is that we don't have to draw the line because it's already been drawn for us. Commodity Exchange Act tells us where the line is, and the amendments on the Dodd-Frank. So if a market is capable of meeting the 23 core principles the CFTC put out, is it subject to manipulation? Can you make it not subject to manipulation? Can you make rules and can you enforce them? Can you have oversight over them? These are all things that Congress gave to the CFTC exclusively to regulate on these issues. So where it is gaming versus where it's gambling versus where it is financial activity, I mean, they used to call futures in corn gambling on corn, or betting on grain was what they used to call on futures on grain. So the Congress has looked at these issues. They've considered, where do we see value in the CFTC being the exclusive regulator? And they drew those lines for us. So now it's just a matter of following that law and working with the CFTC to make clarifications so that we have all those core consumer protections and everything you expect when you deal with regulated financial institutions on all these markets, and we're really happy with what CFTC is doing on that, and we're continuing to work with them on that.
Yeah, I'll just second that. We really appreciate Chairman Selig rapidly moving into these markets, the ANPRM, the guidance that he gave on prediction markets. Look, they're looking to regulate these markets. Important guidance that's come out. I encourage everyone to read it.
Yeah, I spent a good deal of my career as a CFTC enforcement lawyer, and when I hear the dialogue about these markets, people often talk about inside information or insider trading. And unlike on the SEC side of the fence, traditionally there's not really a concept of insider trading in the commodity futures markets, because the goal of those markets is to get information to the market as quickly as possible. There's one bit of the statute that talks about inside information of government officials releasing, you know, like crop reports or farm payroll, that type of information, using that information to trade ahead of it being released. But outside of that, most of those cases, I think, are more about misappropriation of information you had a duty to not use. So if you are in a position because of your job, you have information and you use that to trade when you were supposed to keep the information confidential. So that's a long statement. But the question there is, given that these markets are a little bit different than traditional commodity futures markets, are there things that you have to do? Are there guardrails that you have to put up? Or are there surveillance methods that you have to use for these markets that are different than the sort of traditional futures markets?
Yes, they're definitely different surveillance patterns that we have to run. I heard the last gentleman up here just saying, you know, part of what they do is they look for certain parameters, like accounts that are just open before large trading activity is done on a certain position of sensitivity. We look for all of those same things. You also have to take into account the type of market and what you're looking for. Again, the chairman and some of his guidance talked about potentially markets that don't meet the core principle 3 standard of readily susceptible to manipulation. What you're looking for there is something that can be easily impacted by just one individual, or maybe potentially a market that is too narrow. Look, there are some markets that some of our partners come to us and say, hey, can you make a market on this? We'll work with them, but there might be certain standards where we believe self-certifying our contract, saying that this contract is not readily susceptible to manipulation, that's a process that we engage in. That's sort of the reverse of the securities where you go to the SEC, you register the instrument, and then it's just open for trading. We're responsible for that product throughout the life cycle of it.
Thank you. That's super helpful, Joaquin. I want to shift slightly, still somewhat on the legal side, but Jeremy, Underdog Fantasy is a very successful company. You've dealt with state regulators for a number of years. You guys are really good at that, and now you're stepping into federal, CFTC regulated exchange world. Joaquin, you guys have that. How do you navigate the state and federal regulatory web? I just saw before we got on stage, I didn't get to read it, but another state lawsuit against Kalshi something. I'm not asking you to comment about ongoing litigation, anybody who might be involved in some, but it's a problem. And so who are the regulators that are in the room? Who do you have to think about when you're engaging in these markets, and how do you navigate that?
Yeah, so for us, we have been state regulated through our history. Now, obviously, moving into the CFTC regulation, federal regulation, and we're super excited about it to kind of have one regulator that has oversight across the whole country. We think ultimately creates a way better ecosystem, right? There's a lot of things that can be done that states just simply can't do with unified responsible play guidelines, unified sports integrity, unified AML, KYC, and fraud rules. There's just a lot of benefits to the ecosystem. It's a lot of benefits to customers as well. So I think we're the first company to move from state regulations when we kind of complete this shift into a federal regulatory framework in this space. And we're doing it because it's better for our customers and it's better for our business.
Carefully and thoughtfully. We have taken a lot of time. So we started looking at this space in the summer of 2024. We were the first to list specifically in the sports contract event contract space in December 23rd of 2024. It took us a long time to get comfortable with the type of products that we were going to roll out in these markets. We do seek to be both regulated by the CFTC and where appropriate, for instance, on our crypto markets, SEC markets. We seek to be regulated by the proper regulator. We are also constantly interacting with the state regulators, specifically in the prediction market space. I think we seek to understand their point of view. We don't seek to just go in like a bull in a china shop and break everything and see what happens, not that others are. But we approach this very carefully and thoughtfully and work with the regulators, work with across the board, so state, federal, at times even local, if necessary, to establish the markets that we think are important for our customers that they want to be participating in.
And the Commodity Exchange Act has been updated quite a few times, but one thing that's been consistent across all of it is that they've added preemption. They've added exclusivity throughout. Every time it's been changed, they haven't taken away, they've added. That's because Congress recognized there's value in having a single regulator, having market price discovery that can cross state lines. They see the value in that. They see the value for consumers. I don't think lots of these states are necessarily doing this out of animus or anything else. I think they are truly trying to look out for their state representative, individuals that live in their state. So lots of what we're doing in Digital Chamber is educating, letting them know there is a regulator there, there is KYC, there is AML, there is investor protections, and there's a regulator doing that for the citizens of their state, just like citizens of all the states that they're doing it in. So I think that's really is crucial. It's not just, like you said, not bull in the china shop, not saying that you're necessarily all wrong states, but really educating them on how prediction markets work, how do regulators work in there, and making sure they understand that there is these protections in place already.
Anne Marie's over there on the sideline telling me to hurry up. But we still have 3.5 minutes, which we're going to use, Anne Marie. I'll skip forward a little bit, though. And Jonathan, I'll go back to you. Because this is the Digital Chamber Conference, not the Prediction Market Conference. But there is a role of blockchain in prediction markets. Can you talk a little bit about what blockchain offers or affords to these markets that you can't do with a traditional Web 2 market in terms of composability or 24/7 trading or whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the findings from the Fed report is that one of the key values of these prediction markets is that they can be available 24/7 for price discovery. They're not reliant on a period of surveys or when a survey is done or when people are releasing their data as a financial.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
Institution or something along those lines, say have that ability in there. And that's a value we see, especially in blockchain tech, is, right, we can do these like data clustering. We can figure out when there has been manipulation or when there is something unusual that not just the DCMs and anyone else can monitor, but the public at large can see that as well. How many times do you go on Twitter, X, whatever, and you see that there's been a revelation about some kind of crime or fraud or something like that that didn't get brought to light because of a financial regulator? It got brought to light because there are crypto forensics firms and crypto forensic experts that can see on-chain data. So to be able to aggregate those, and we just saw the CFTC release no action today, yesterday night, for the be able to introduction brokers, for the self-custodial wallets to be able to be a way for consumers to access these regulated financial markets. I think that's truly innovative, and we see where that's going. We're going to start with the DCMs. We're going to start with these markets that maybe aren't necessarily crypto rails, but it's all moving towards crypto rails, like we talked about. Instantaneous settlement, being able to have 24/7 price discovery. These are all hugely beneficial to the public at large.
And a last question and speed round, I guess. You know, if you're looking into the future or predicting the future, you know, what does success look like here? And you can answer one or both of these. You know, we have a lot of policymakers attending this conference, a lot of members of Congress and regulators. You know, if you could change one thing or pass one law or one regulation, you know, to benefit the industry, what would that be?
Look, my hope for the future is just a vibrant ecosystem that is very well regulated, where kind of all the rules and guidelines have been agreed to by the whole industry and ultimately are upheld. And it's ultimately going to be a way better place for consumers and do a lot for the market and market participants.
Yeah, I think I sort of second that in that, you know, 2 years ago, everybody told me that cryptocurrency was definitely a security. And I think that we're at the point where we realize the vast majority of them are not. I hope that we get to a place where this product becomes something that's regulated in the U.S. in a constructive manner for both the industry and the consumers.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think clear regulation allows more liquidity and more proliferation of these markets. And in the future, you could see a world where you have specialization within the prediction markets, much like Wall Street. We have fixed income teams and hedge fund teams and quant teams, and within that specialized sector sector specialists. So I think that is probably like the ultimate end game for something like this. It's like a renewed instrument where everything can be traded, and you have a financial ecosystem similar to what Wall Street's created, but in prediction markets.
I would say just clearing up the misconceptions when it comes to onshore versus offshore, regulated by the U.S. versus not regulated by the U.S. And as those lines, making sure that those lines are clear, just like we saw with the securities market, just like we saw with money market funds and things like that, being able to integrate these DeFi opportunities, these DeFi markets as well within that regulated financial institutions, the regulated markets that are regulated by the U.S. But really just clearing up misconceptions, I think, is the main goal.
Excellent. Thank you, guys, and please give these guys a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you.